This is Giving Purpose Podcast, highlighting Bay Area nonprofits and the work they do to better our communities.
Hello and welcome to Giving Purpose Podcast, where we highlight San Francisco Bay Area nonprofits and the work that they do to better our communities. This is your host, Ana Pimentel Calero, along with co-host Joe Netto, and we are very excited to have you listening in and would like to introduce you to our guest. However, Joe, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. It was actually a better, is it Tuesday? Yeah, it was a better day than yesterday, but... I was going to say, you know, I want to tell a little funny story about how I came to meet our guest, actually. My daughter needed to have some community hours a couple of weeks back, and it was like the last week. Of course, that's how teenagers are, right? They wait till the last minute to tell you when they got to do something. And so I was scrambling around. Well, really, it was like not much of a scramble. I was like, you know what? Hidden Villa Ranch, they do, you know, they have volunteer opportunities. I'll check on their website and fill out their form. And not even 30 minutes later, I get a email back from this person who runs a volunteering over there, Sophia. And, you know, I go, we set up an appointment, and my daughter and I were planning to go out there and pick some weeds and, you know, pick weeds for about 5 hours, do whatever we could for 5 hours because she needed 5 hours. Of course, it was supposed to rain, and it did rain. And we got out there in the first, you know, hour and a half. We're out there going in about 30 minutes and just start pouring rain. She's fighting me to put on her, you know, poncho. And I'm like, just put it on. Nobody cares. It's just us and the squirrels out here, you know. And so what happened, though, is that they were having a volunteer kind of ceremony or volunteer event there. It was a really great event. They invited us in. We had homemade soup. We created some herb bouquets from the local herbs. And in that, they're also, Hidden Villa Ranch is celebrating 100 years. And so they had all these stories going on back and forth. And, of course, my shy self as I am, I shared a couple of things I know about Hidden Villa Ranch. And as I'm walking out, you know, as we're, my daughter and I, all right, let's get back to picking weeds. We've had, you know, enough of being inside. You know, I'm sure it was very generous of them to invite us in. As we're walking out, we were approached by David and Hillary, who David is our guest, and we're going to talk about that shortly. But we got into a conversation, and it turns out that our meeting was it was kind of like just one of those things that it was a needed meeting because, well, we have this going on with this with our podcast, and I thought David was a perfect candidate to bring in and discuss what he's doing with their nonprofit. Magic. So why don't we get into our guest and get into what we're going to talk about today?
Sounds great. Let's introduce our guest. David Schrammetz co-founded Magic in 1972. He has won national and international recognition for guiding projects in health education, community development, dispute resolution, urban planning, natural resource management, and value science teaching. Since Magic's inception, he has been a central figure in evolving its Value Science Foundation, its strategy of integrated research, teaching, and demonstration, and its project's interweaving themes of personal health, cooperation, and environmental stewardship. Currently, he writes and teaches about value science, provides counsel to those operating Magic day-to-day, and leads in adapting Magic ideas, policies, and programs to the unprecedented challenges and opportunities in the current era. So that was a lot of information. But with all of that information, David, why do you do the work that you do?
I can answer that in so many different ways. I think my most personal motivation comes from childhood, when my parents, who recognized that I was very able as a young person, began telling me that my privileges were something to be shared rather than something to be hoarded for personal benefit. And even though I was brought up with very traditional aspirations, go into business, make a bunch of money, give some substantial portion of it away, maybe go into politics, attempt to have positive influence on the society as a whole. I always had in the back of my mind this notion of service. And my dad was a great example of that. He not only tithed to our church, but he also tithed to the local United Way. And he was constantly going out of his way for the people who were his co-workers and employees and neighbors and fellow churchgoers and everyone else with whom I observed him interacting. So there's that long sense of, hey, you benefited from tremendous good luck. Now use it for everybody's benefit. But the reason I do the specific work I do, as well as I can explain it, is that I asked three questions about the possibilities in front of me when I was fairly young. And by that, I mean when I was still in my 20s. And the first one was, what do I want done in the world? The second one was, what are other people doing less well than I think I can do it or completely ignoring? And the third one was, the second one actually was, what am I capable of doing? The third one was, what are they doing less well or completely ignoring? And at the intersection of my responses to those three questions was this idea of somehow taking the personal, the social, and the environmental and combining them with both theory and practice so that I was a thinker, beer, doer, who positively influenced things in all those realms. And the framework that I had stumbled upon in my early 20s for doing these things was the discipline of ecology. So I found ecology to be a basis for improving our health, for creating a fairer and more peaceful society, and for taking care of the earth so that we and those who may follow us might benefit in the future.
That's fabulous. I'm thinking of ecology. It brings back to me. I keep thinking of that Marvin Gaye song, Mercy, Mercy Me. You're familiar with that?
Marvin.
Yeah.
Have mercy.
It's something like...
Have mercy, baby.
Ecology is tied into that song, actually, into the title. I don't know if you ever saw that. There's like a sub part of it. And everything that you're describing, stewardship of the land, sorry, my brain just got a little away from there, but all those things that you were describing are wrapped up kind of in that song as I was listening to you talk about that. Looking at your website, if you don't mind if I jump in here, your website, ecomagic.org, the banner has a statement, has three questions on there, right? And I'd like to know more about that. I think one of them you kind of just mentioned. It reads, using science to discern and realize value, with three following questions that ask, what do you want, how can you get it, and how do you know? Could you explain those questions and the statement, if you could?
Yes. In the 24 hours before the three of us came to sit here, 8 billion people woke up and began asking consciously and unconsciously, what do I want and how can I get it? Some people rolled over, some got out of bed, some ate breakfast, some skipped it, some dressed for work, some stayed in their pajamas. And throughout the day, all of us have kept asking those questions. Well, what do I want now? How can I get it? Shall I go to lunch with this person? Shall I make this phone call? Shall I dig this extra row in my field? But whoever we are, we kept asking and we keep asking, what do I want and how can I get what I want? And now that we're so numerous and so powerful and wield these amazing technologies, the cumulative effect of our actions based on our responses to those questions is a greater and greater influence on the lives of the people around us, the people who may follow us, the world as we see it and our own inner life. So it's pretty clear that our ideas about what we want and how to get it are somehow different from what we actually want and how to get it. And that, of course, is entirely reasonable because inside our head is this little grapefruit and it's full of little synapses and neurons. And when we wire them all together, we make a model and we call that our ideas. And just the way the map is different from the territory, a menu is different from the meal, our ideas about what we want and how to get it are different from what we actually want and how to get it. So now we've talked about what do we want, how can we get it, and we've started to look at, well, how do we know this? And you might recall that just before those three questions, we had this statement, using science to more accurately discern and more fully realize value. Whenever we say we want something, the only time we can get it is in the future, whether it's a second from now or decades from now or even after our lives have ended and things like world peace have finally, hopefully, come to be. And when we make the statement, I want something, then we're necessarily making a prediction that if we get it, that will be good. But we're living with the consequences of what we did to get what we want, and we see that a lot of it is anything but good. And so we realize, we've been doing some pretty crummy predicting. So when you stop to think about it, life, living things are in many ways just little prediction machines. The ground squirrel wants to predict that it can get its food and get back to its burrow before the hawk drops down and takes its life. The hawk wants to predict that it can get the ground squirrel before it gets to its burrow. And throughout the living world, there's this process of looking into the future, because life is an ongoing phenomenon, seeing that we have preferences and aiming to behave in a way that realizes the preferences that we hold highest. Over thousands of years, and before us, over millions of years, living things have evolved the ability to learn, and humans have evolved a set of best practices for learning to make predictions. We call those practices science. And even though today, when we say science, so many people think about what's in the textbooks, the contents of science, or the technology, the products of science, or the institution, we have to get more funding for science. The essence of science is this set of behaviors. And if you guys look down at your feet, you'll notice you've got your left shoes on your left feet. You manage to do that day after day. Well, about by day 10, the chances of that randomly are 1 in 1,000. By day 20, they're 1 in 1,000,000. So you're doing some very high class prediction to hit with that consistency. And over a lifetime, each of us aims to improve our ability to make predictions. And each of us does that. We're all sciencing all the time. And the only question is, how well do we science in any given domain of our lives? What I'm wanting to emphasize here is that this thing called science is something we universally practice. It's universally available to us, and all of us can claim it as part of our birthright and part of our identity. And what we can do, if we think about it, is we can use it to make better predictions about what we want and how to get it. And that what we want and how to get it, I referred to earlier as our preferences. And I spoke about strength of preference. And when we talk about value, the root of that word is val. And it means to be strong in Latin. And it's like valence in chemistry, the attraction of an atom for its electrons. Or, valor in knighthood, right? To be strong. And so value means strength of preference. And our values are what we want, the means and the ends of our lives, the ends being the what we want and the means how do we get. So we can all use science. We can all science to know value better. And that's the gist of value science. Now, I know that was a mouthful, but you ask.
Yeah, no, I mean, after hearing you, you know, talk through that, everything really was clear. There were some things in my life, you know, that I've tried to reach through science. And I think we all, like you said, we know these scientific facts or scientific findings. The problem is it's the motivation to use those scientific findings to reach our goals. You know, for instance, I went through about 5 years ago, I wanted to lose weight, and it was more, my motivation was a vanity thing at that point. I wanted to lose weight because I didn't want to look so plump anymore. Now, I lost the weight, I lost 60 pounds, and then I had some injuries and COVID kept the office too close to the kitchen. So I put on a good amount of that weight back, and here I am again, trying to find, I know the science behind it. I know I got to get up and I got to run 3 or 4 times a week. I know I got to watch the meal, my intake, my calorie intake. But now my motivation is different to use that science. Now it's because I want a healthier life. I want to, you know, I'm hoping that those things make me live longer or, you know, be here longer for the people that I love, you know, my kids and stuff like that. So I think that's a big thing, though, is that, you know, we have this knowledge of the science that's going to get us there, because you said, you know, we know these things, but how do we practice them? How do we get to that point? What's our motivation for doing that? Is it a singular thing or is it a group effort to get us to that point?
And like you talk about value too, Joe, and motivation. What is your motivation, David, or your giving purpose in the work that you do?
I just want to feel good. I'm a hedonist. And I discovered long ago that somebody else's bowl of rice is worth much more than my champagne.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Yeah.
That's a great quote.
Yeah. Let me see here. Oh.
You stumped him.
You did. Well, if you're familiar with the work of Abraham Maslow, I bet you've seen Maslow's hierarchy. Right. No. Maslow's hierarchy of values. He talks about food, shelter, clothing.
Yes, and, yes.
Right, and then security and love and belonging and self-esteem and all the way up to transcendence. And this transcendence thing, I mean, the bag of skin that's sitting here with you guys is destined for reuniting with the stars. From stardust I came, to stardust I'll return. And in the meantime, this little brief instant is just a chance to either be fearful or to embrace the inevitable and recognize that anything I can do to be part of you in a positive way is extending my own existence in some sense. And that kind of motivation is powerful stuff. And of course, I'm sitting here as somebody who's only ever been hungry really because I wanted to be. Because I chose to fast, as opposed to because I looked everywhere I was able to look and ask everyone I was able to ask and was without the ability to secure food. So I want to recognize that, as Maslow said, there's a hierarchy there. And at the same time, boy, I have experienced some of the greatest generosity that I have ever seen among people who were so close to the line of being no longer with us that it's really... remarkable. So almost any of us still has the ability to give something.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I ran out of gas, you know, as a teenager coming, an older teenager, coming back from L.A. with my other teenager friends. And, of course, we spent all our money somewhere in L.A. And we're driving back. We had no gas, and we ran out of gas in somewhere near Bakersfield, but, you know, one of these Highway 5 gas stations. And we're sitting there, like, asking for money, you know. It's like, this is the only time I think I've ever really begged for money. And we're sitting there asking for money, and people with these well-off, you know, cars coming through, nobody stopped. Nobody gave us the time of day. This one family comes in with, you know, what looks like the Sanford & Son truck. If you don't know, it's this beat-up jalopy. Comes in, probably 6 or 7 people pour out of this car, the whole family, a Latin family. And the guy looks at us and he gave us $10 back then. Gas was like $2 a gallon, if that. And we were able to get at least enough gas in our car to get to Fresno, where my mom lived at the time, and get back to where we had to go, back to the Bay Area. But it is, you know, you find generosity in sometimes in people that are closer to knowing what it's like to not have nothing than to those that have everything. But I want to get back to some of the things I had here that I want to ask you. You just went over a little bit, but I want you to, the term value science, you know, I see this in your website over and over and over again, and you did do a great job of just kind of explaining it to us in that three-part first loaded question that we had. But can you just give me a little bit more on value science? I'm trying to, you know, what that term encompasses.
Well, I want to go right back to the example you gave. Okay, you want it to be lighter, and that was a sort of first level motivation. And then you developed, after some experience, another level of motivation where you started to think, hey, wait a minute, I want to be here for my kids and their kids.
Right, yeah.
And so you started building motivation. And we've learned a tremendous amount about human habits. And the stuff we learned about calories in and calories out, that's 100 years old, 200 years old. We know that if you eat an extra teaspoon of sugar every day, you gain 10 pounds a year, right? So we know that that's trouble. But there was a famous Chinese philosopher who said that knowledge is action. And the getting from the knowing, and I put up scare quotes there for you, to the actual being and doing. And that's why we wanted to integrate those at Magic. So that's a big step. But we can science that step, just the way we science the step of there are this many calories in the cheesecake and this many calories in the egg. We can science, okay, how does a human being evolve the motivation and alter the behavior in order to reach a goal like becoming lighter and staying that way? And that's value science. What do I want? I want to be lighter so I can live and enjoy my kids and my grandkids, right? How can I get it? Well, step one is, yes, it's caloric. Step two, yes, they're necessary nutrients. Step three, well, these are the patterns, the repeating patterns that we can see in the lives of people who at one point or another became much larger than we wanted to be, and then became smaller, reached a level with which we were content, and stayed there. Okay, let's make some predictions based on those patterns and shape our own behavior accordingly. And you mentioned, can we do it by ourselves? Do we need to do it with others? Well, we learn how to create support groups for these things. We learn how to create what the communities of practice called Sangha by the meditation people. And that's what magic is. It's a community of practice. It's a place where people live together in order to see how thoroughly we can science what we want and how to get it. And when we do that, we discover, and we leave this out because we're without necessity to dictate that we're going to work for common good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you mentioned community, and there was another term that I caught on your website, and it was called intentional community. And I want to know more about that. What is an intentional community?
Well, the three of you who put this podcast together are an intentional community. You're people who come together with a shared purpose, and I presume that there's more than just the technical purpose of making a podcast. This is a special kind of podcast. It's not Joe Rogan. And so you share some values, and you work together cooperatively to realize that purpose and promote those values. And that's what an intentional community is. It's a consciously chosen community, and I might contrast it to a community of birth, where unless you're different from I, you were just born into a family that you were without any role in selecting, and or the community, the neighborhood into which you were born, or a community of that kind that was just an accident of birth.
Yeah, so, well, now that we've learned about the philosophy of magic, how are you using value science, intentional communities to promote your message with magic or your teachings with magic? You know, how are people driven to find you, or how they find you, and what kind of things are you doing to put magic to the test, I guess?
You say, are we doing? So I'll speak about the present. We do have a 50-year history.
Yeah.
And if you looked at the website, you saw that in that time, we've knocked a few balls out of the park in realms ranging from health education to peacemaking to environmental stewardship. And we continue in all those kinds of things. We're very much opportunists. And by that I mean we stumble into opportunities just the way you and I met, and we take advantage of what drops before us. We're very local. We travel almost exclusively by bicycle. I get in a car less than a dozen times a year, or any kind of motorized transport, and more often closer to two or three. I look for what's immediately around and seize the opportunities to serve. So currently there's some people at Magic who are residents who are wanting to learn how to swim. So I teach them. So we imbue everything we do with this kind of thing. We are bringing our neighborhood together. We founded the Neighborhood Association, and we've for 40 years we've sponsored a neighborhood block party in the spring and a neighborhood picnic in the park in the fall. The group that provided music at Hidden Villa for the volunteer recognition event is part of Magic, and it's music for good. They provide music at the neighborhood picnic. They provide music at the community services agency donor dinner. So it's little stuff. We have resisted the many, many inducements we've had to grow magic. And some professional artist drew up this logo with a globe laid flat, Magic International. But we really want to keep it personal. And in fact, even with support, we're reluctant to take what we call disembodied dollars. If you have yet to eat at our table or learn with us in a seminar or a classroom or a swimming pool or out in nature, then we want to just wait until you know us better before we invite you to contribute your money to us. So now among the projects we're doing, we take high school kids out and help them learn about biodiversity by collecting insects and spiders, arthropods, for DNA barcoding in order to create an encyclopedia of life. There's a barcode of life database, open source, global. Magic has contributed a substantial amount to it, even though we're this teeny little group in Palo Alto and there are major institutions like UC Berkeley working at it.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I'm looking at, you know, some of I'm listening to some of the things you're saying and going back through my notes, and it's just amazing all that magic encompasses. It's really like a, I don't know how to explain it, but it's like a self kind of motivation, not in the self-motivational, but it seems like you're giving people the tools that they need to progress towards what they want most out of life, or what they want most to enjoy out of life, you know?
I feel enormously grateful and to have come of age during the height of the Vietnam War. I went into college thinking that I was going to come out, go to officer candidate school, get flight certified, fly jets off Navy carriers, and bomb the communists back into the Stone Age in order to make the world safe for democracy, okay? All my uncles and my dad had been in the service. I came from a really conservative part of the country. But people poked me with enough hard questions about that war to get me to rethink myself. And I got to the point where I'd stripped away so much that I'd previously believed that I became fearful that I wasn't anything. And that was actually traumatic, but at the same time, liberating, because there I was sitting and thinking that, so I had to be. And so that idea of then reconstructing a consciously chosen self, as opposed to just being a ballistic person who, much like a artillery shell was shot, or an arrow was shot from my mother's womb toward a waiting grave on a largely predictable trajectory. So with value science, we're aiming to assist people in awakening to the potential to be a consciously constructed self that somehow sheds the accidents of birth that may prove to be less adaptive in today's world and in tomorrow's world, and that becomes a work of in progress.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's an animal instinct of ours that brute force gets it done, right? Our brute force will, you know, is this power that we hold, but really the power is looking within yourself and finding out different ways to achieve those goals without having to use that brute force.
Yeah.
You know,
it's kind of that idea too of, I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg actually said this, but people listen to you when you don't yell, when you don't attack. Yeah. You won't be listened. It's kind of like white noise almost.
Yeah.
And it's kind of that same way of that brute force going forward. You, like you said, you kind of lose yourself almost. You kind of forget the reason why you're doing it. I know that with me sometimes when I'm pushing towards goals, I'm like, why am I doing this again? What was the point? And so I think that you bring that up, and that's incredible, of reconstructing and rethinking what you really want out of life. And that I never thought of science in that way, but it makes sense now after hearing you explain.
Oh,
so thank you.
Thank you. You made my day. You ask, how do we do it? This is how we do it. One person, one conversation, one project, one volunteer event at a time, one little seminar, one presentation. And out of all that comes a certain amount of, oh, I get it. And that in turn, people pass on and say, hey, I did this thing the other day and I heard this idea. And
yeah, and it was intriguing and pushed me to kind of keep looking into it and maybe adapting it to my life.
Well, it's a tool,
yeah,
right? And some people use a paintbrush to paint with oils, and some use with acrylics, and some paint landscapes, and some paint still lifes, and some paint pour. But it's a tool. It's a very flexible tool. And value science is a very, very flexible tool that goes to the very root of the full spectrum of issues that so many of us are concerned about. Because when we're dealing with as much difficulty as we have on as many fronts as we have them today, it's like looking at a tree that has many dying leaves. And the answer to that is something other than to paint the leaves green or pluck them off the tree. The answer to that is to go down to the soil level and see what's happening with the roots.
Yeah, that's true. It all starts from the bottom up, right?
Yeah.
It looks like MAGIC has several service learning communities. Could you go into more detail about how these service learning communities come about, how they are led, and how they're used to further MAGIC's ideas?
The service learning community is a term that you may be using to refer to the residential service learning community here in Palo Alto, and one that we just began up in the Eastern Sierra with a MAGIC emissary who moved out there. And that's an opportunity to be integrated thinking, being, doing together in this sangha of seeing how we can develop our ability to contribute to love. And the larger service learning community is all the people who interact with us and consider themselves to be somehow connected to these core residential service learning communities, but who espouse a similar set of ideals with respect to using this tool we're calling value science to live a better life and contribute to others doing so.
Yeah. I noticed that you have a value science course offered on your website. How can this course be taken? Who can apply to the course? And how does one sign up to take a course?
Currently, we offer the course both in person and online. And you just contact us through the website and say, I want to know when the course is going to be offered again. And here's my contact info.
Okay. How? What's entailed in one of these courses?
Well, that depends in part on who's signed up and what those people want. We always aim to communicate a certain core of information, and we like to incorporate in every course both a practicum where from the day one you identify some element of your own existence that you want to address, and then through the weeks of the course bring back your results in addressing that issue and evolving how you're going to either change what you want to address or change how you address it to bring your results into line with your aspirations. And then there's also, finally, a project of stand and deliver, where you pick some audience, and it can be your sister or your parents or your best friends from high school or your sports team or your church or whoever. And you go to them and you say, hey, I've been studying this thing and I want to talk to you about it because I've found it useful. Now, if you got through the course and you think this was a complete waste of my life, our first question is, well, why did you stay? but if you at some point feel like, hey, this may be great for other people, but I'm finished with it. Well, obviously, then the last thing we want you to do is go out and fake it. But if you get to the course, you get through your practicum, you did some learning about how to be living more the way you want to live, then we're really glad if you're willing to tell people. And the course is without any fee. Many people have paid zero, and some people have paid tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
And that's just fine. You know, you see me, I've got clothing on. Admittedly, it came out of the dumpsters at the end of the school year, but it's comfortable. Yeah. It's much more comfortable than the clothing I wore when I was working at the law firm or at the investment bank.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I had to pay a lot for. So I got food. You can see I'm animated. And I got a place to sleep tonight. So as long as I've got that kind of stuff and a bike to get over here or ride up to the skyline or to the beach or something, I'm a happy camper, and I'm glad to continue offering this in the world and seeing if people can benefit.
Yeah, so before I kind of close it out and ask you to give our audience some contact info and contact points and where they can find more out about Magic, something you said to me when I was leaving that day with my daughter was, and it intrigued me, was like that, you know, this is donating to Magic actually donates kind of back. It's like the circulation. So the people that are giving time for Magic actually are receiving back from Magic. And that's this, you know, like renewed kind of philosophy of life or philosophy within yourself, renewed within yourself, taking the tools that they came to Magic to kind of, you know, help with or find out more about. And they're leaving there with almost like Magic is donating something to them. So yeah, it was like this circle.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, forgive me, but we're aiming to build a community of love based in science. And if you interact with us, just, I mean, I hope you feel that with me tonight. And what I want to add in my parting shots is both a thank you to you guys for what you're doing for us at Magic personally by giving us this platform, but also for what you're doing for other small Bay Area public service organizations. Because you asked me in an email before this meeting what I thought the major issue was for public service organizations today, or some of them. And you know, the thing that's just most glaring to me is that they're all these human beings. You can find, just ask a random person on the street, who have good ideas about how to give back to the community, how to give more to the community, how to assist the people around them in living and dying well. And there's so little resource devoted to that. And I keep thinking of my dad's double tithe. And we were people who gave, you know, we ate meals without meat back in the 50s because that was stretching the budget. But he double tithed from day one. And when I think about if just people tithed, last year, the total charitable giving in the United States was about $1,000 per capita. And if you look at that as a fraction of GDP, it was 1.25%. If you look at it as a fraction of per capita income to the household, it was about 2.5%. So if we tithe, we're going to up the available resource for service by a factor of 4 to 8. And when I think about bringing back that much gift into the social sphere, and I think about that as a path towards a day when the giving part of our society vastly outweighs the commercial exchange part, and that those things, commercial exchange is reserved only for those transactions where giving proves impossibly impracticable. I love it, so thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. It was really a great conversation. I mean, I feel I learned so much about Magic today. I was really intrigued to learn more. And really, I'm leaving here knowing that you and I are going to talk again, that's for sure. I want to thank you. And if you can, tell our listeners how they can find Magic, website, email. What's the best way to...
Straight through the website, ecomagic.org, ecomagic.org.
Perfect. Well, thank you. We appreciate your time. Thank you, David, for joining us. Another great episode of Giving Purpose Podcast. Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us on Giving Purpose Podcast, and please click on the subscribe button to stay informed about new episodes. You can also find more information about Giving Purpose Podcast on our website at givingpurposepodcast.com, or add us on Instagram, Facebook, or Threads at Giving Purpose Podcast. You can also find us by the same handle on YouTube for some supplemental video content of each episode. We'd like to thank our guest, David Schramm of the public service organization Magic, for joining us today. We'd also like to thank our co-creator and editor, Isabella Garino Hernandez, for all her behind-the-scenes work. We'd also like to thank our chair, Professor Nisha Gerard Patkar, and committee members Kim Massey and Gordon Gurley for their continued leadership and support. We'd also like to thank you, our listeners, for your interest and contributions to our featured guests and the work they do to make their giving purpose effective in our Bay Area communities.
Thank you for listening to Giving Purpose Podcast. For more information, you could visit our website at givingpurposepodcast.com.